from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. Today's guest, Boston Globe Celtics writer Adam Himmelsbach. We're going to talk with Adam about life outside the bubble for the NBA. It's been more complicated than anticipated. A number of teams affected by COVID complications, including your Celtics. And Adam has a really interesting name that I think is realistic in terms of a guy the Celtics could be targeting to bolster their bench. Also, Ellen has an alternate theory on why James Harden would not have been a good fit for the Celtics in a trade.
Well, newcomer this year is Tristan Thompson. And Tristan Thompson and James Harden might have a little bit too much in common.
Yeah, some shared history, sort of, which could work against the Celtics from a chemistry standpoint. As we all know in the NBA, the chemistry off the court, just as important as the chemistry on the court. And one other thing we talk about in this is Peyton Pritchard. Right now, he is all the rage in Celtics Nation, and people are having a raging debate about what his nickname should be. There's a number of contenders, and one of them, in Ellen's mind, is not legitimate, makes no sense, and reminds her of somebody relieving themselves.
I just can't be the only one who hears.
But I think you are.
Speaking of number one.
Oh my God.
I can't be the only one who hears fast PP and doesn't think about relieving oneself.
I think you are the only one. But what's interesting and what I'm impressed by is that you can still connect this to his other nicknames, which are all some derivative, basically, of Eminem.
Right. So you hear fast PP, relieving yourself, lose yourself, 8 Mile, B-Rabbit, P-Rabbit.
That is so impressive, Ellen. That might be the most impressive thing that's ever been said on this podcast. And that's why you're here, for this pop culture drama, this pop culture knowledge.
This pop culture potty talk.
Yeah, yes, I guess that is part of it. Yes, that is. Boy, the FCC is really going to come down on us. But it's always educational when we talk with Ellen Fleming, and hopefully it will be educational when you hear from Adam Himmelsbach. He's next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right. Now, as promised, we're joined by Adam Himmelsbach, Celtics beat writer for the Boston Globe. Adam, how's it going?
Pretty good, Chris. How's everything going?
Going really well. So I wanted to ask you, obviously, about the Celtics, but let's start here with the COVID complications they've dealt with, because that's sort of the story du jour right now in the NBA. The league has had to postpone, as of our talking to you, 14 games due to either positive COVID tests or contact tracing. The Celtics had 3 games postponed due to that, and their best player, Jason Tatum, has tested positive. How concerned are you about this affecting the rest of the NBA season, and what effect has it had on the Celtics?
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's anything we've learned about this virus over the last year, there's no way to predict anything. I mean, if you had told me last March when I came back from Milwaukee when the NBA was shut down, if in mid-January the Celtics would have 3 players not playing games since COVID, I'd be like, no way, man. You know, by then everything will be fine. So I think we've learned to predict is not smart. But look, the NBA was expecting this. That's why they put out just one half of the schedule instead of the entire thing. Because they're like, all right, there's going to be postponements. We need to have the wiggle room. This isn't catching them by surprise. I think people kind of compare it to like NFL or whatever. It's more glaring because the NBA are playing like 4 or 5 games a week.
Great
like
point.
NFL, we have these, you know, contact tracing. They have time to figure out the contact tracing before the game, or maybe a guy misses 1 game, but then, you know, it's 1 game over a 13-day span. But it's certainly more glaring in the NBA. There's no question about that. And the postponements are piling up. The Celtics, basketball-wise, and it always seems a little trivial to focus on that, but that's what we do, I guess. But basketball-wise, they kind of lucked out to having those 3 games postponed, because they were really close to playing with, like, 8 guys in a couple of those games, which would have been lost, almost certainly.
Yeah, so that did work out for them in that way. How do you feel about sort of the way the NBA is going about it? I know Doc Rivers, coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, was basically saying, you know, yeah, we have the 8 guys, but some of these games like aren't really competitive when you're missing that many players, and a lot of times they're your best players. Do you feel like the NBA's approach in terms of, well, you have 8, you know, even if 2 of those guys are basically guys on 2-way contracts, like, we don't really care about the competitive nature of the game, you have enough to play. Is that the right way to go?
Yeah, it's tricky. Like, the NBA has made it really clear they wanted this season started. If you remember, it wasn't so much for COVID, but the Players Association, the players, they didn't want to start this season until Martin Luther King Day, basically. That was their bargaining point. They're like, let's, you know, LeBron just finished playing in Orlando for 3 months. We'd like a little more time. And the NBA said, look, you can try that, but you're going to lose millions and millions of dollars if we miss these Christmas games. So everything, like, okay, you know, we'll play at Christmas. And now with the Olympics, you know, have a lot of international players, a lot of U.S. players like to compete in the Olympics. And also, let's be honest, like, the NBA doesn't want its marquee events going up against the Olympics, like a colossal sporting event. So I think their push is really just kind of keep things rolling, keep things moving. We know these games aren't perfect anyway, right? Like, no one had training camp. There's no fans. Like, it's kind of like, let's just get through this and get as close as we can to reality.
What is your feeling on, you know, potentially going back to a bubble type environment that obviously works so well for the NBA when they resume the season over the summer in Orlando and then completed the season with the Lakers winning the championship? They got so many kudos and plaudits for that. They didn't have a single positive player test. But at the same time, I know that a lot of players basically felt it was like a luxury prison and didn't really want to go back to that. Have you been able to speak to any players? Do you have any sense from the players that if this gets really bad, would they be willing to go back to an Orlando type bubble, or is that just off the table?
Yeah, I'm not so sure if it'll be like once in a lifetime, but they definitely don't want to do it. But also, you got to remember, it's like the logistics of it. The bubble is like really expensive too. It's not like, oh, we can just pop everyone here. Like, that costs the NBA a lot of money beyond players having zero desire to do it. And there are only 18 teams. What works so well with the bubble is you have those teams, and then within like 1 week or 10 days, a group of them are gone. And then 2 more weeks, another 8 were gone. And it was like being whittled down. It's so much different than like hypothetically asking 30 teams to compete in these various bubble environments for extended time. Like, there was much more finality to it. Obviously, with this vaccine being out and being distributed, like, there is hope now, whereas we didn't really have that in the summer. But I could see, if hypothetically things stay bad for an extended time, that during the playoffs they try something similar again. I'm not sure what it would be, but that would be the time I think they might.
Adam, what's your thoughts about players actually taking this seriously when it comes to COVID? Because obviously in the headlines, what we're hearing and seeing are the players that are breaking the COVID protocol, but we're not hearing about everyone else who is following the COVID protocols. So what are your thoughts? Do you think that they're kind of just like the rest of us? We're all getting real tired, or basically like they didn't want to be playing right now anyway, so they're going to do what they want?
Yeah, I mean, I think like the rest of society, there's COVID fatigue. And I think they probably, you know, it's hard to say, but they probably mirror the younger generation a little bit that is less concerned about it than the older generation. They've also, like, you know, have pretty strict protocols. They went to this bubble for months. You know, now you'll watch guys, like, they're wearing masks on the bench after they check out of games now. Like, there are a lot of steps the NBA has taken to try to make this safe. Some of it I thought was a little weird. Like it was weird to me that one of their first things was, all right, we're going to separate the bench seats by 3 feet or 4 feet. Okay. But yeah, when you're on the road, you can still get in an Uber and go to like one of these 10 restaurants.
Yeah. And they're all touching the same basketball, but we can't high five.
Right. Yeah, like avoiding high five. Some of that, I guess, is just kind of for show. But the NBA, while they've had problems, it feels like they do take this seriously, and you don't at least hear a lot of pushback from players being like, "Oh, this is stupid. I'm not wearing that mask." Or like, they've pretty much gone along with most of the protocols.
Yeah, and here's what I would say: we know about the NBA players because they're getting tested more than anybody in America. And I've said this about professional athletes: we know about their cases. We know about a Robert Williams, a Jason Tatum, a Carson Edwards, because they're getting tested twice a day. And now the NBA is going to up that to you're tested twice a day and you have to take a PCR test on game day. So the testing is why we know about it. And also, you can't separate these athletes from living in America. Like, the NBA can have all the protocols they want. The reality is, if a guy needs to go to the grocery store and it's running rampant in his city, then there's a greater risk of contracting it. So these guys are basically only going to be able to tamp down the virus as much as America tamps down the virus. And I think that's something that sometimes people lose track of. I do want to ask you about the Celtics and switch this over. They lose Gordon Hayward, obviously, in the offseason. They get the trade exception for him. They're off to this 8-4 start, one of the best records in the Eastern Conference. Have you been surprised by how well the Celtics have played?
Yeah, it's hard to say surprised. And Brad Stevens alluded to this a little bit, and I wrote about this about a week ago. They're like really close to being 5-7 right now. You know, Jason Tatum banks in a desperation three that basically missed the rim by 5 feet, went in. Peyton Pritchard got a fortuitous bounce with like a buzzer beating layup. Tatum at, and credit to them for winning those games, but a couple bounces here and there. And we're having a different conversation. What's wrong with this Celtics? Two things. Jaylen Brown's ascension to really that next level of all-star. Like if they picked the all-star teams right now, he's an all-star without question. And I don't think a lot of people would have guessed that at this point in the year. And then Peyton Pritchard has been an essential cog. Like, I don't know where this team would be without Peyton Pritchard. Now that Kemba's back, they won't need him as much. With Aaron Nesmith showing that he's not quite ready for the NBA, it appears. With Kemba out, with other guys being out, like, Pritchard has been essential coming off the bench. He is so poised and has had so very few rookie moments where you're just like, I feel like this guy's been in the NBA for a while. So the two of those guys, I feel like, have kept him afloat.
I want to hit on Peyton Pritchard for a second, and then I'll circle back to my man, Jaylen Brown, because I've been a big fan of his since he was drafted.
You have been a Jaylen Brown guy.
Everybody knows I'm big on Jaylen Brown. I was there the night he was drafted when Celtics fans booed owner Wick Grousback when they announced the pick because they were disappointed they hadn't traded the pick for a veteran. At that time, it was Jimmy Butler was the rumored guy. But on Peyton Pritchard, he's an interesting player. I'll admit, I was wrong about him. I didn't think he'd make this sort of impact this soon. The Celtics have struggled, I think, to get guys at the end of the first round that can contribute. There have been picks like J.R. Giddens and R.J. Hunter. It seems like they definitely hit on this one, Adam. But there are people out there, Celtics fans, who are saying this guy's ceiling is like a Mark Price or a Steve Nash. Where do you fall on Peyton Pritchard? Is he going to eventually be an all-star point guard in the NBA, in your view? Or will he just be a starting point guard who's a very good role player type?
People remember Steve Nash was like an NBA MVP, right?
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like they forget he won like two MVPs.
Yeah, so I think everyone should calm down with those comparisons. It's funny. I can't remember the last player who there's been so many comparison conversations about. Like, I've had him with friends and coworkers, and like everyone wants to be like, who is Peyton Pritchard? Is he TJ McConnell? You know, the best one I've heard, and the one that people I trust in the NBA who have seen him play a lot longer than I have and know the game better than I do, is Fred VanVleet as kind of like a ceiling. Not saying he's there yet, but if you look at the way they play, if you look at kind of their styles, I could see that as more of a ceiling. Like, I'm not talking future MVP, but I think he's going to be better than like a TJ McConnell, let's say.
Yeah, he's definitely better. He's already better than TJ. TJ McConnell doesn't even look at the rim.
Yeah. I mean, he can shoot. I'm just really just impressed at how, like I said before, just how poised he is. He's been thrown in to like clutch situations right away in the NBA, and he just has this like really kind of mild manner about him. You don't see him like screaming or getting flustered. He just always has the same facial expressions regardless of what just happened. And you know, like Danny has talked about, I wrote about this for a minute. I had a Q&A with Wick before the season even started, but after the draft, and I asked him about the draft picks, and he said, in all my years when we drafted a guy, he's like, I hadn't seen Danny as excited about drafting a player as he was about Pritchard since we traded and got Rondo and whatever that was, 2006 or something. He's like, it had been that long since I'd seen Danny that excited to get a guy on draft night. This is before Peyton Pritchard even played like a preseason game. Like, that was just solely like, everyone's like, oh, kind of, who is this guy? Oh, he's probably not that great. So Danny was pumped.
That's really interesting. The only thing I'll say to that is I think Wick would have seen Danny that excited in last year's draft if they had gotten Tyler Hero and he had not gone one pick before them to the Miami Heat.
Ooh, that's a fair point.
Yeah. But no, I mean, he's been really good. And I want to ask Ellen this because she's sort of everything sports and pop culture. And you can weigh in too, Adam. Where do you stand on the Peyton Pritchard nicknames? There's so many of them. There's Fast PP is one. That's one of his nicknames, right? Some people are calling him 8 Mile, right? P Rabbit. Which is a lot of these are takeoffs on like Eminem and the 8 Mile movie. But how do you feel, Ellen, about the nicknames? And are you partial to one?
I can definitely say I'm not for fast PP for obvious reasons.
No, what are the obvious reasons?
Well, you know, fast PP.
Oh, I never thought of it that way.
No one else heard that?
His name's Peyton Pritchard.
Yeah, but it's PP.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
Like potty.
Yeah, I know.
Like a baby.
I just didn't think of that.
Okay. So I would say I'm out on that one.
Okay, you're out on that
one. I like Pee Rabbit.
You like Pee Rabbit.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you like Pee Rabbit?
Well, just because it's Eminem.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot of the comparisons he's getting. Everything's like an Eminem derivative with him. Adam, do you weigh in on this? Peyton Pritchard nickname?
I've covered a lot of like different teams, different regions. I've never seen like a fan base / media as obsessed with giving players nicknames as stuff. Like the second a guy gets here, people are trying to fix me a nickname. And your guy Forsberg is like one of the lead. He leads the charge pretty often. But they're like, we got to get these guys like the 7-11, like Jalen and Jason. What are we going to call them? Like, you know. Anyway, I will say I actually like Fast PP just because it's funny. It's funny to me. That was his Twitter. I don't know if people even know that was his Twitter handle. That was why I asked.
Oh. See, that makes more sense.
There you go. I didn't know that was his Twitter handle. Okay.
But his Twitter handle was fast, and then, you know, the letters PP. And it was like that, like, at the start of training camp still. Because I didn't realize it, and somebody pointed it out to me. And then the second it started catching on, I noticed his Twitter. He instantly changed his Twitter handle. I don't know what it is now, but it's not Fast PP anymore.
Interesting.
So I feel like that was his way of being like, I don't want to be called this very much.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, it's kind of like Seinfeld, like when he gave himself the nickname T-Bone, like Peyton Pritchard wants to give himself his own, he wants to get to his own nickname. Just jumping off Peyton Pritchard to the Celtics bench, because you mentioned how valuable he's been for them off the bench. That's still one of the big question marks on this team. As of right now, 12 games in, Adam, they're 20th in the NBA in bench scoring. Last year, they were in the bottom three in the NBA in bench scoring. Friday night against Orlando, the bench was really good. They doubled up the Magic, 66-33. But then in this terrible loss they suffered on Sunday, 105-75 to a bad Knicks team, the bench was not good. They got outscored 35-28. Where do you stand on this bench? Do they still need another piece there? Is it upgraded over last year? And can they rely on it?
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think the hope, and I don't even think this was really the hope within the Celtics organization. I think they realized this wasn't going to be his year. But the hope, at least among fans and the curiosity among the media, was like when they drafted Nesmith, it's like, all right, this guy, maybe this guy will be their title hero. Oh, this guy shot 52% from three at Vanderbilt. That's what they need, a guy that can come off the bench and just pop it. It's too early to say anything for sure, but it sure doesn't look like that's going to be the case this year. That's why Pritchard emerging has been so huge. But I think it is worth remembering, as it seems like it always is with the Celtics, like they haven't had their full team yet. So now when you put Kemba in the starting lineup, that changes the bench. You know, all of a sudden, hypothetically, you got Marcus Smart back leading your bench. You know, Tristan Thompson has missed games. Like when they have their full squad, which in the NBA, it's almost rare these days to have a full squad. But I feel like that will give them a better indicator of where they're at, what the rotation is going to be. Like Robert Williams now is out for a couple of games. Like when he comes back, he's looked pretty promising. Like among that group that is very capable, though, I think you're right. There still feels like a need for like a shooter.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, somebody like a Terrence Ross, it feels to me like they're a wing short. I am big on Aaron Nesmith. I'm as big on him as I was on Jaylen Brown. Obviously, he's not getting the playing time. Oh, yeah, I am. I mean, I really like that pick. I wanted them to pick him. I thought it was a great pick. He hasn't gotten the playing time. It seems like he's a little lost on defense. I'm hoping they can get him up to speed. But I think to truly contend in the East, this team needs a veteran wing that can generate his own shot coming off the bench. They seem a little short there. Shemi has played well this year. He's exceeded my expectations already. But again, you go back and sort of look at what happened against the Knicks. You know, he sort of came back down to earth. He was 0-6 in that game and 0-6 from three. I still don't think he's a 3-and-D guy yet. They need to bolster that bench, in my opinion. I know they have this trade exception from the Hayward deal with the Hornets and from Hayward landing there instead of Indiana. Who do you think some potential targets would be to bolster that bench?
Yeah, I hate throwing names out because then the next thing you know, it's like there's a headline attached to it.
Well, that's just because you're so well known. Adam, people take what you say and they're like, this is going to happen because you're that good a reporter. So you are a victim of your own talent.
That's a good guess, Chris. I appreciate that, but it's not going to get you money. But no, a name I put out at the very start of the year I think would fit, and depending on, it seems logical given that the team's trajectory, it wouldn't be great. It would be like a Harrison Barnes type.
Yeah, that's my guy too.
Yeah, I mean, that would be one that would make sense. Although, Like, when was the last time we as media or whoever, like, had these lists of, like, potential targets, like, and it actually happened? It never happens.
Yeah, I'd have to think probably, like, PJ Brown was the last time. I don't know. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I'm sure there's someone else, but you're right. Most of the time we're wrong. I will say, though, that Harrison...
Harrison Barnes would be a nice target.
Oh, totally. Like, I agree with you, Adam, 100%. And I know I've spoken to him a couple of times when he's come here to play the Celtics, and he has a good relationship with Danny. He's talked about that from his draft year, Danny working him out, and he has respect for the Celtics organization. I think he would be an excellent fit for the Celtics, especially playing like a role player role, sort of like he did in Golden State, even though they put him in the starting lineup. He didn't finish as many games there all the time. So yeah, I would love that. You did mention Kemba Walker there, and I think this was great that they got him back. And when I just listened to the things that Kemba had to say about how good he feels, I think that's really, really encouraging.
I felt really good, man. I felt really comfortable making my moves, pain-free, which, I haven't been for a very, very long time. Kind of almost feels weird, actually, not having pain. It was, if that makes sense, it's kind of a weird feeling.
And so, Kemba not having the pain in that knee is huge. And to me, that's bigger than what he did, Adam, in his debut. 3 of 13, 1 of 8 from 3. The rust was to be expected. He's on a 20-minute limit. Do you think this is the time that he can really, really sort of get over this knee injury? Because as he said, it's been bothering him for the last couple of years, even in the bubble. Like, he looked great to start against Philadelphia, but then he kind of trailed off, and he even admitted that when he was doing his moves in the bubble, like step backs and drives, he was thinking, this is going to hurt my knee. Is this something where he can finally be sort of over this, or do you feel like in a compacted NBA season, that knee is going to flare up again?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt they're going to be cautious with it. They were already extremely cautious. I think a lot of teams would have had him out playing by now, because he's felt fine now for several weeks. But they have seen there's been other times where he's felt fine and then it comes back. So their goal is for it to stay this way. It's absolutely encouraging that he felt great yesterday and had no pain. And one thing I thought was interesting that he talked about is the mental strain this has had on him. You kind of alluded to it right there, Chris. Is he said he's thinking about it even. He said not even basketball related. There'd be times where he's just doing things everyday life when he would have pain or be thinking about, oh, should I do this on this knee? And it was getting in his head. But, this thing has kept popping up. So I also don't think having one pain-free game where he played 20 minutes against the Knicks means, oh, thank goodness Kemba's fine for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, Kemba will be 31 in May. I always say this about smaller players, and he's had a great, great career, no question about that. And he is a difference maker. And I think the way he gels with Tatum and Brown is amazing as a four-time All-Star. It's what they wanted out of Kyrie. And obviously that situation didn't work out. That was an ill-fated marriage. But when I look at smaller guys, and we saw this a little with Isaiah, if they have some sort of nagging injury that affects their mobility or their agility or their explosiveness, they just don't have the same margin for error as a bigger player that can shoot over the top. Like, a lot of times their quickness, their ability to maneuver, that's what allows them to be so effective and score. And if Kemba has this and it's something that's going to be a nagging injury, and even if it takes 15% off his explosiveness, I'm not sure he can be the same player. And to me, that changes the calculus of how good the Celtics are. If he can stay healthy, I think the Celtics are as good as any team in the Eastern Conference, and I think they could come out of the East. If you take him away, I think they're a middle-of-the-pack playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I mean, this is a guy that started the last two All-Star games, and even among guards, like, the way he plays, it's kind of what you were just describing, like the stop and go, the Kemba step backs. Like, and that's probably, if we're being honest, like, why he has knee pain right now. He's been doing that since he was like a kid on the streets of New York City. But you're right. If they can get him back to All-Star Kemba, like looking like the Kemba looked at the start of last year, this team's ceiling definitely raises a few notches.
Oh, no question about that. He's such a key guy. That's why I get sort of nervous, again, when I hear what they told us at the beginning of the season, Adam. Stem cell injection. I know he had like a Synvisc injection last year, just from covering sports, and you've done it too. Like, I covered Dustin Pedroia. Those type of things are normally, I don't want to say last resorts, but that's what you do, and I'm not a doctor, but that's what you do when it's like a bone-on-bone thing or cartilage is missing, and those things normally don't go away.
Yeah, I actually did a story about the stem cell thing because that it was pretty foreign to me. I am definitely not a doctor either. And the medical people I spoke to, is interesting. They mostly said, there's no proof that this actually does anything. It's not going to hurt. It's not going to make him worse. But right now, there's zero real proof among, you know, people in the medical field that this is something that's going to make a difference. But one doctor who didn't even want to go on the record, he goes, but I wouldn't tell Kemba that. He's like, because, you know, there is a belief that like placebo effect is a real thing. If he, in his mind, hey, I feel great. That stem cell thing worked, you know, like that might help him. Anytime you hear like draining and injections and all that, and like you said, in a 31-year-old knee, you're always kind of like, ah, it doesn't sound so great. But hopefully he can get through this one and be all right.
Yeah, I mean, fingers crossed, because he is a dynamic player and he's a great personality. And I think he helps sort of balance out maybe the passion and volatility of somebody like, say, a Marcus Smart is balanced out by Kemba Walker, who's just a cool customer. We're this far into the podcast, and I can't believe we haven't talked about what to me is the biggest story of the Celtics season. We've touched on it, but that is the emergence of Jaylen Brown. You look at the 8 assists he had against Orlando last Friday. That was a career high. He's had career highs in points this year, 42 against the Memphis Grizzlies, career high in rebounds twice, 13. And the shocking thing to me about this is that they had such a short offseason after finishing the season late in the bubble, 79 days. It's not like he had a lot of time to work on his game. And I'm not going to say he's come back and been a completely different player, but he's taken a leap.
Some of those stories have cracked me up this year. They're like, so-and-so has improved this in the offseason. What did you work on in the offseason? I'm like, the offseason was like 10 days. Like, probably like went to the beach and then like, you know, shot some jumpers. But yeah, with Jaylen, to me, so much is confidence related. There are times we've seen earlier in his career when he was still learning his way, and you would see if things aren't going well for him, even when he was like missing free throws, he even said that was a mental thing. It was getting in his head. But when he knows, and again, this is part of the thing with Kemba being out, you saw a little bit when Gordon Hayward was out before, when he knows, all right, this team, like it's me and JT right now, but like they're relying on me. I need to be the one to do this. He always seems to play better. And Kemba actually mentioned that. Someone asked him about that yesterday after the Knicks game, saying like, how important is it for Jaylen not to kind of pull back a little bit? And Kemba kind of smiled, which Kemba always smiles about everything, I guess. But he's like, man, that guy's a killer. He's like, and we need him to stay being a killer. He's like, I don't want him pulling back because I'm here. He needs to keep doing exactly what he's doing. He's been excellent. His passing, like you said, not only did he tie his career high with 8 assists in that game, he did it in 25 minutes. He's making the right play. He's making the smart play. And he's just playing with so much confidence right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's really incredible to look at how efficient he's been this year in terms of what he's doing with efficiency, especially for a guy that, I mean, his usage rate is way, way up. I mean, 29.5% usage rate. Jason Tatum's at 31. Those two guys have carried this team in a lot of ways. They've always sort of been compared to each other. Adam, I've always felt that you would have like a Kobe Bryant type talent if you could combine Jason Tatum's skill set, Jason Tatum's natural skill set, with Jaylen Brown's sort of Mamba mentality. I always felt like you would have that ultimate NBA alpha male. But maybe you don't need to combine them if you have the two of them complementing each other.
You know, that's just going to make people mad that you just said like Jason Tatum can never be Kobe Bryant. There's going to be fans
I know
in your mention being like, JT's only 22. He could be better. Kobe.
I know.
But no, you're right. I mean, that's the thing with the Celtics, as frustrated as fans have gotten recently, like, oh, they have to take that next step to the finals. It's so much easier to step back when you look at your two building blocks being 24 and 22. It's such a difference. If they were 34 and 32 and you see a window closing, I could see a need for more urgency. But this gives them time, and especially seeing how both of them are clearly getting better every season they played, really, it has to give us all this confidence knowing that, all right, we're building around these guys. Like, there's no doubt they have to feel good about their building blocks moving forward.
Thank you, Brooklyn, for those picks. And as I mentioned on Jaylen, I mean, just at this point, 12 games in, shooting 53% from the field, 41% from three, and 80% from the free throw line. That's really impressive in terms of the leap he's taken, especially for a guy. The knock on him coming out of Cal after 1 year in college was Jaylen Brown can't shoot. That was the knock on him, and he's been highly efficient, making a bunch of great plays. And I think Jason Tatum has just sort of picked up where he left off in the bubble, and I've been really impressed with his playmaking too. As we wind down here, Adam, I can't be in a position where we're talking about those two guys, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and not sort of go to the always active NBA rumor mill. As the NBA turns, James Harden was out there. He was available. He landed in Brooklyn. He's with Kyrie and KD now. But Danny Ainge came out on 98.5 and said he admitted they had discussions about Harden and the asking price was too much. The asking price involving Jaylen Brown in the past. The Celtics have been involved with negotiations for guys like Kawhi Leonard and Jaylen Brown's name has come up. They haven't made those deals. Would you have moved Jaylen Brown for James Harden?
I think it all depends on what the rest of the deal was, but based on the way Jaylen has played, and more than anything, what we were just talking about before, the timelines, I don't think I would have. Because right now, like, Jason Tatum is your timeline. He's 22. He turns 23 in March. Harden's 31. Like, you bring him in. If you swap out Harden for Jaylen, and the Celtics would have had to give up some other pieces too, I'm not sure that team's favored to beat the Lakers. So then where have you gotten at that point? I think even if Jaylen, honestly, even if he hadn't started this season this well, it wouldn't be something I would push towards. And it, as you can tell, it sounds like the Celtics didn't either. Like, a lot of times we always hear about, oh, they had conversations about this guy. People within the organization have laughed to me when they hear those things. They're like, there has never been a time in NBA history, especially when a top player is available, that we haven't made a call. It's like, why would you not? If you don't make a call about James Harden, you're an idiot. But there's such a colossal difference between making that cursory call and like being really close to having a deal involving Jaylen Brown and James Harden. It sounds like Celtics were never close to that. And I think they made the right call there.
And I'm sure Danny Ainge didn't think about this, but it would have been really weird for Khloe Kardashian to have Tristan and James Harden on the same team.
Oh, that is a great point.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. See, that's why you're here, Ellen.
Mm-hmm, I know.
Yeah, that would have been really strange.
I don't know why they didn't call me, but...
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked. That probably tipped it to not do the deal.
Yeah.
Ellen, educate me on this. I don't know. What's James Harden's connection? I don't even know.
James Harden was dated Khloe Kardashian for a little bit there.
After Lamar Odom and before Tristan Thompson.
Yes, right in between. Okay. And then James allegedly broke it off with her because he didn't want to be part of the spotlight for the reasons why the Kardashians are part of the spotlight.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe you just broke the story.
My God, see, we are making headlines.
We are making headlines. There you go. I know, that's going to be on like Slam or like Hoops Hype in like 30 seconds, Adam. No, I agree with you, though. I think that you are wedded at this point to Brown and Tatum for the most part and their growth together. I love James Harden as a player, but I also don't think that his personality would be a great fit for the team or really honestly for Brad. I don't think that would be ideal for Brad at this point in his career. The one guy I would consider, not the one guy, because obviously if LeBron became available or like Anthony Davis, but a deal I would consider moving Jaylen Brown for, and this is tough because you know how much I love Jaylen Brown, but Bradley Beal. I love Bradley Beal as a player, and the fact he's boys with Tatum, to me, that sort of puts it over the top because I'm like, all right, now I'm placating my best player in Tatum by bringing in like basically his best friend.
Yeah, I don't hate that. Also, what, 5 years younger than James Harden?
Yeah, he's 27.
Yeah, I wouldn't hate that. I think the Celtics' perfect world is you have Jaylen and Jason, locked up long term, and you get to the point where they're viewed as superstars. Where a third guy goes, I want to go play with those two guys in a couple of years, and it's like you see what's happening on these other teams. Like, oh, I want to go join LeBron here. Like, you want to be the point where somebody says, oh, I want to go join Jason Tatum here. I think we're a couple of years away from that, but that's would be a good ending for the Celtics.
It certainly would. It's also a good ending for us, Adam. Thanks for joining us on the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate it. That's Adam Himmelsbach, Celtics writer extraordinaire for the Boston Globe. You can find him on Twitter, at Adam Himmelsbach. Also has a mean beard. Also a very stylish fellow.
I appreciate that, man. I was wearing my schlubby sweatshirt for
you. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate it, as always. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast so others can find it and enjoy it. And now you can email us at take5@wcvb.com. We'd love to get your feedback and hear your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.